Man, that was a rough weather night in the Central Plains, no doubt about it. That storm front is running into Tropical Storm Cristobal as it makes its way into Iowa. Heavy rains are expected in the central and western Corn Belt over the next 24 hours, but then drier conditions move in. The weather might straighten out soon enough to take out this year's weed crop on schedule.
Live from the front edge of a Midwest tropical storm, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Dr. Bob Hartzler from Iowa State University. And Chip, somebody put a bug in my ear. We might get Farm Journal's Sonia Begeman to chime in on that as well. She's got lots of knowledge in this area. Then it's on to former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Yeah, you know, I know that it's not all that unusual for a tropical storm to push into the Midwest. I get that. Yeah. Hurricane Isaac in 2012 saved the bean crop, for example. Okay. And there are other examples, but this one is holding together unbelievably well. And it's going to end up in Ontario before the thing starts to die out.
Well, I can speak it's impressive. From my backyard. Yeah, from my backyard. My yard farm could use a drink, to be honest. Okay. My cabbages are looking a little wilty. My Brussels sprouts, I don't know. They need a little something. But they also, you know, if we could avoid strong winds and sort of damaging hail and that sort of stuff, that would be great, too. Am I asking for too much?
Well, if that system that is out west makes its way over to us over after Cristobal moves on, if that system that's out west makes it to us, then no. Yes, that is too much to ask because the wind is blowing out in the Central Plains today.
Man.
Good grief.
All right. So I better tie down the canoe, bring the kayaks in the garage, right? Is this what you're telling
hatches.
Me? Well, and now I can smell rain outside. I'm clearly going to have to do that in the rain. Doggone it.
Yep. Yeah, it is about
That's
to
poor
spin
planning on
us
my part.
Up here in Bremer County as well. So, it's going to be an active 24 hours for us. I don't think there's any question about that.
Lots
to talk about today. Dicamba is going to be our top priority when we get Bob Hartzler in here and Sonia Begeman. Obviously, that's going to be our top priority. And then we're going to talk dairy exports with Tom Vilsack. Always look forward to that conversation. All right, let's get to it. What's in the news?
Well, Chip, why don't I start with the highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update. That's for the week ending May 31st. Corn is 97% planted, 89% emerged, 75% good to excellent. Soybeans, 86% planted, 67% emerged, 72% good to excellent. The spring wheat crop, 97% planted, 81% emerged, and 82% good to excellent. Now on to cotton, 78% planted, 13% squaring, and just 43% good to excellent. And the winter wheat crop is 85% headed, 7% harvested, with 51% of that crop rated good to excellent. We got in Pro Farmers First Thing today, there were comments from Dr. Michael Cordonier, and he put out some ideas about yield and an above trend line yield on corn, at least, and a pretty decent yield on soybeans as well.
Absolutely. And part of the reason for that, knowing Michael for almost 20 years now, part of the reason for that is when you get that early season improvement in the condition of the crop, even as some of the crop gets into that ugly stage where there's a little bit of a stunt or stall in the growth, and you know part of the crop is reaching into that starter fertilizer, some of it hasn't quite reached it yet, so you get this little bit of an uneven stand. When Michael makes a move like that early in the season, puts a bushel on the trend line yield, things are really looking pretty good out there.
Well, Chip, the Environmental Protection Agency says it will allow farmers to use dicamba through July 31st, as long as that farmer had taken possession of the product before June 3rd. That's when the agency decided to block its use. Administrator Andrew Wheeler said, quote, at the height of the growing season, the court's decision has threatened the livelihood of our nation's farmers and the global food supply. Wheeler also noted canceling the registration and allowing farmers to use existing stocks is, quote, consistent with EPA's standard practice following registration invalidation and is designed to advance compliance, ensure regulatory certainty, and prevent the misuse of existing stocks. And we'll have more on this in the upcoming segment. No?
Absolutely.
A bipartisan coalition of House members, bipartisan I mentioned here, Chip, which is good to hear, echoed sentiments expressed by several state governors in a letter to President Donald Trump, urging the administration to deny requests to waive requirements outlined in the renewable fuels standard. The letter said excessive waivers would, quote, only compound the challenges facing rural America. The letter continues saying recent oil market volatility is the result of COVID-19 impacts and not on impacts from the renewable fuel standard. And to me, that makes a lot of sense, Chip, pointing out where the pain comes from and how relief should be distributed.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are going to be talking about the future of American ethanol in Thursday's Farm Country Update presented by Farm Journal. I'm going to be hosting this one. We've got Jeff Cooper from RFA lined up, ready to come in. Dan Bossi. We've got a representative from POET that is going to be on, and still working to add to that list of panelists that are going to be on discussing the future. And obviously, Jeff Cooper is going to take the front or take the lead when we talk about the defending the RFS and these waivers.
Yep. And quickly, speaking of Cristobal, the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement said that as of midday yesterday, approximately 34% of current oil production in the Gulf of Mexico and approximately 35% of nat gas production in the Gulf of Mexico is currently shut in due to the storm. They're moving on to getting it reopened here as quickly as they can. Chip.
Yeah. If you want to register for that Farm Country Update, by the way, I just Googled it to see how to. It's the first one that pops up. Just Google Farm Country Update. It's the first one that comes up, and it's simple, easy peasy to get registered for that. All right, let's bring in Annalisa Laca, editor at Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Annalisa?
I'm great. How are you, Chip?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Last week, we had some disappointing news about some milk checks from Dean Foods. What's the update?
Yeah, so we last week talked about how Dean Foods, you know, was caught in the bankruptcy. And April checks for farmers who shipped directly to Dean Foods were going to be delayed. And there was a lot of uncertainty around those payments. But the great news is several of the farmers we talked to last week reached out yesterday to say that they had gotten their checks. And they said that they've heard from Dean Foods that all dairy farmers will be paid by the end of the week.
Good. Good. That is good news.
Great news.
What is the overall status of that of the bankruptcy process that they're in right now?
So at this point in the bankruptcy process, they're trying to wind down the estate. And so there's a gentleman who's serving to help do that with the court and the lawyers. They still have a few assets that they need to sell. So they're trying to do that. And then they still, you know, at this point, one of the things that is unclear, we know that farmers are getting paid this week, but they owe a lot of other suppliers and cooperatives a lot of money. They owe DFA alone $80 million. And it's unclear if that's been paid yet.
All right. Annalisa, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. It's Annalisa Laca. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Class 3 milk futures higher today. Hey, we'll be right back with Dr. Bob Hartzler from Iowa State next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American Agriculture, Farms On, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Hey, Davis.
Yeah.
You won't believe who showed up during the first segment.
Oh, who's that?
Cristobal.
The ghost of Gophers Past? What?
No. Well, yeah. But Cristobal showed up.
Oh, hello. Yes.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes. The first raindrops. So your cabbage should be getting some relief right now.
That's excellent. I'm going to shut in approximately one third of my natural gas production here at the house, just to be ready.
Just to be ready. Good for you. Good for you. All right. Lots of news around dicamba and the ability to use that product. We're going to have a conversation now. Let's bring in Sonia Begeman first. Sonia is the Farm Journal Seeds and Production Editor. She joins us right now. Sonia, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
Just fine. Just fine. Let's bring in another guest, Dr. Bob Hartzler. Dr. Hartzler is the Extension Weed Scientist at Iowa State University. Bob, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Real good. Yourself?
Doing just fine. Just fine. Boy, Bob, talk about an untimely decision from that court out in California.
Yeah, our beans had just reached the stage where they are ready for post-emergence applications, and then they have that dropped on the farmers with no time to plan for alternatives. It couldn't have been worse.
Yeah. Yeah, terrible timing on it. Sonia, what is the latest? What did EPA announce overnight?
All right, so last night EPA announced that they issued a final cancellation order for the three dicamba products. That's Ingenia, Fexpan, and Xtend. So what that means is they're canceling the products, but it gives EPA the power to basically say what farmers and commercial applicators and retailers can and cannot do with their existing stocks. And so last night with that announcement, they did say that farmers who had the dicamba products in their possession by June 3rd and commercial applicators who had the dicamba products in their possession by June 3rd could use those products. So they can apply it. They have to follow the previous label instructions, of course.
Yeah.
But they can go ahead and apply it. For the manufacturers, for like warehouses that would be storing products to deliver to farmers, they cannot move that product unless they are disposing of it or returning it to the manufacturer. So kind of, you know, some relief for the guys who had stuff in their possession for sure. But I know we've got some retailers who have these warehouses potentially full of products that still have some questions.
Yeah. And Bob, aren't there some states that have said that they will not enforce the mandate?
Right. And that was what really had us worried, is if a farmer had problems, such as in Iowa, where our department said they're not going to follow that court ruling. If a farmer had problem, which position are courts going to take? Are they going to follow the Ninth Appeal Court? Are they going to follow IDAL's restrictions? So it really put farmers and applicators in a tough position. I didn't know what to tell them. It was my gut feeling. I would go on the safe route and take an alternative. But this EPA ruling has cleared that up and is a big relief for everybody involved.
Right. Okay. So you can go out there and use the dicamba products as long as you've got them on hand as of June 3rd. You can go out and use those products by July 31. That leaves plenty of time to get the job done, right, Bob?
Yeah, except that, you know, we had record planting here, and probably about 50% of our beans are going to reach that 45-day planting restriction by the end of this week or early next week. So, you know, it's not like we have till July 31 to use the product.
Right.
90% of what was going to be applied will be applied by, another week or so.
Okay. alternatives. You mentioned going an alternative route. What choice did they have?
For here in Iowa, you know, we're battling water hemp, and the water hemp is all resistant to the ALS inhibitors. Most of it's resistant to glyphosate. So the PPO inhibitors, things like Fomosafen, you know, Flexstar, Cobra, those were the options that probably 50% of our fields have resistance to them. So there wasn't a good option for growers who had planted Xtend beans. And so that's why this is such a good decision by the EPA to allow this.
Okay. Guys, and I don't know if we know the answer to this yet, but what's going to happen to these products? Are they never coming back?
I think that's the question on everyone's mind right now. We're looking at 2021 and beyond, and EPA was working with these registrants to get a permanent registration in place. And, you know, with this, the FIFRA issues we have here, and then with them issuing a final cancellation, I think there's a lot of questions and a lot of concern. Bob, do you have any insight into, you know, what you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I have no insight, but, you know, when they, like you said, they called it a final cancellation.
Yeah.
That seems pretty, pretty final. So, but I have no insight whatsoever. I know Bayer is looking at new formulations that have reduced the volatility issues, and so whether they'll be able to start from scratch with those formulations, but that's, I'm sure, 2 years at the minimum away. So,
yeah. So obviously, that's going to have an impact on variety selections for next year.
Right. We're fortunate we have some good alternatives. You know, I'm sure some growers, you know, are convinced the Xtend genetics are the best fit for them, and so they're not going to be happy that they're going to have to go to some other trait. But we are fortunate there are options that when we have time to plan, we can incorporate them on the farm and get our job done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bayer is expecting to have its Xtend Flex soybeans available next year too, which is the Xtend that we have today plus a tolerance to glufosinate. And so for those farmers, like Bob said, that really do like the Xtend genetics specifically, there might be a new option, you know, assuming everything goes well through the process it has to go through.
Okay. All right. This chemistry, is it just for farm use, or is it for, for landscapers and lawn use? Is dicamba in lawn herbicides?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many different premixes out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Trimec is sort of the generic term.
Yeah.
And so most dandelion herbicides for lawns, you know, have 2,4-D, MCPP.
Yeah.
And dicamba, some of them will have triclopyr, but the there's lots of other dicamba products out there that are not affected by this ruling, and those are the products that were used, you know, in turf, corn. So all those uses are still out there. It's just the uses on the Xtend crops, the corn and or the soybean and cotton.
Okay, so, Bob, pretend that I know nothing about the chemistry on this, because what makes the difference then? If you're going to allow it on one for one use, why is it disapproved for soybeans?
That's a good question. But I would say the major difference is the application window. The dicamba on corn in Iowa, that wrapped up maybe 2 weeks ago, whereas in soybeans, we are just gearing up. And so the later you go in the season, the warmer the temperatures, the greater the potential for volatility.
Okay.
And also there's more things out of the ground at a sensitive state. So it's basically when the products are used during the growing season and the temperatures.
Okay, I gotcha. I gotcha. Sonia, I was going to say it's probably liability that is the biggest difference, right?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, we didn't see, because dicamba's been around for, Bob can tell you how long, I think, but it's been around for a long time, and we didn't see this amount of damage before until it was over the top of soybeans and cotton.
Right, absolutely. Dr. Bob Hartzler, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. We certainly appreciate it. We'll get back to you for another update.
Okay, sounds good. Take care.
All right. All right. That is Dr. Bob Hartzler, Extension Wheat Scientist at Iowa State University. And Sonia, thank you so much for jumping in here. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
You bet. Sonia Bagaman, Farm Journal Seeds and Production Editor. We've got Tom Vilsack next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. Boy, Beach, the grain markets kind of went on the defensive this morning. What's going on?
Yeah, kind of a rough start here, Chip, this morning. You know, we saw an uptick in crop condition ratings yesterday, and I think that that's putting some pressure on the market. Market's looking at it that, you know, crops are off to a great start, which they are. You know, it doesn't mean that there aren't some potential issues out there. We're watching, you know, longer-term forecasts calling for more heat and dryness in the extended outlook. So that's a possibility down the road as something the market may get excited about. But for now, they're looking at the crop ratings and saying that everything is just fine, and that puts pressure on the market right now.
Yeah, yeah. We talked with Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group yesterday. He said basically there's no yield risk built into corn and soybean prices right now. Maybe a little bit on wheat because of some of the conditions in HRW country, but corn and soybeans pretty much non-existent there. Mixed trade going on in livestock. What's happening?
Well, we did open with a weaker tone in the cattle market, but have turned that around and now trading with somewhat of a mixed tone. The front end of the live cattle market is up and the back end is still under a little bit of pressure. Just the flip is true in the feeder cattle market with the front end under a little bit of pressure and the back end a little bit firmer. Hog market, it's still under pressure, but has come off its earlier lows. So, you know, the market started with a negative tone, much like the grains did and some of the outside markets today. But we are seeing some at least positive price action here as we move through mid-morning.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Man, Davis, what a mess they have got going with this dicamba. Just think of the billions of dollars spent on research and development of these products. And these varieties out there. I got a note from Sonia. There was one number that she wanted to slide out there. EPA estimates that there are 4 million gallons of dicamba in the trade channels yet.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it may not mean that it's in an applicator's hands as of June 3rd. And if it's sitting in warehouses and at retailers, it's got to go back.
It's got to go. Yep.
Onto the field. So, man, oh, man, oh, man. It's big plans.
It is just another case of, okay, here's some regulation for the farmers. Yep. Here's something for the farmers. Now let's figure out how to actually do it. Come on, guys. Come on, guys.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, let's talk dairy exports. We've got former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, former governor of Iowa, and the current president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, Tom Vilsack, with us. Tom, it's good to talk with you again. How are you? Are you there, Tom? Huh. I'm not hearing him. Davis, are you hearing?
We had him. No, I'm not hearing him. We had him. Yep.
No, let's Joe, you could, if you could, try to figure out what's happening there and so that we can get the secretary back on with us. So, yeah, and the
dairy,
reason
Yeah,
that,
go ahead.
The reason that I asked the question about the other uses or applications of dicamba is because that product is out there. That chemistry is out there. But like Dr. Mm-hmm. Hartzler said, it's more about when it is applied and how it is at risk of being, you know, volatilized out there. Okay, we've got Secretary Vilsack.
Looks like we may have
now.
A secretary. Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Secretary Vilsack, how are you today?
Good. Not too bad, fellas. How are you?
We are really good. It's good to hear your voice there, Mr. Secretary. I tell you, when we talk about dairy exports, you've got a really nice string that has been put together, and it maintained some momentum through the COVID pandemic, Secretary Vilsack. It's very impressive what's happening.
Well, it's impressive, and certainly it speaks well to the efficiency and the sustainability and the great products that dairy farmers produce and their processing industry provides to the rest of the world. But 8 straight months of export growth, I think it was surprising that we saw export growth in March and April. We're taking a look at a market that's about 9% above where it was last year at this time. So we're looking for any old port in the storm, as they say, and this is obviously good news.
Yeah. You know, we've talked so much about the specialization of the supply chain in the meats, in dairy, and in this case, because some of those processors are geared up specifically to make product for the export market, it may have actually helped to relieve some of the supply issues out there. Am I reaching there, Secretary Vilsack, or is that accurate?
That is accurate. I mean, we have great diversity and versatility in what we produce. But having said that, you know, the cheese market's obviously not as strong as we'd like them to be, in large part because food service around the world has been shut down. But at the same time, you know, our powder, our whey, lactose, whole milk powder, all up significantly. And that's what's basically carried us for the last couple of months. And it's Southeast Asia that has been a significant market for us. And so it's not just diversification of product, it's also diversification of markets.
You know, and that market, you go back 4 or 5 years ago, and Southeast Asia for dairy products out of the U.S. wasn't much of a market, was it?
Not really, and that's one of the reasons why we deepened our presence in this market. We just opened up a Center for Dairy Excellence in Singapore, and we've got more people, more promotions, and more partnerships in that part of the world, and it's paying off.
Yep, absolutely. So if that's where the consistency in demand through March and April came from, what kind of products specifically are they looking for?
Well, skim milk powder, critically important to their food service and food manufacturing industry. The whey proteins, people really focus on health and wellness in that part of the world, and we're now be able to make the case that whey proteins are for health and wellness. We saw a pretty significant jump. This is also true in terms of China. We're beginning to see them use permeate to rebuild their hog population, and now they just recently approved the use of permeate in food products, so we hope to see a stronger Chinese market as well.
Okay. Mexico, what's the status there? It was so good, you know, the USMCA and starting to get rid of some of the tariff barriers, or I should say, have we gotten rid of those tariff barriers?
The barriers were gone. And the great thing about the USMCA as it relates to Mexico is it maintained tariff-free access. Now, this is a tough market right now, in large part because the Mexican economy is not as strong as we'd like it to be. They're oil dependent, and when oil prices went down, it certainly impacted and affected their economy. Now the virus has hit them, and so that is a concern. That's an area that we're keeping an eye on. We're working very closely with the Mexican dairy industry itself to encourage greater consumption, and we hope that by the end of the year, things pick up a little bit, but that is an area of concern.
Okay, absolutely. The other thing is when we look at how supply has been tightened up a bit, it's being reflected now in Class 3 milk futures prices. You've got June up at $20.36 this morning. The July contract is trading over $19, and that strength goes right out to the fall It's good for producers, but it makes it tougher on the export side. Do you expect that the exports are going to be maintained through this price rise in milk prices?
Well, it's going to make it tougher for us to do the cheese side of the trade. Our cheese prices right now are not as competitive as they need to be for the export market. At the same time, our powders are still pretty competitively priced. And again, greater demand in Asia for our whey protein and for some of the higher value protein products. So our hope is that we're able to maintain the momentum. Obviously, the virus has and will continue to impact our sales, but this is a very resilient industry, and the fact that we've diversified our markets and diversified our product mix, I think, has bode well for us during a very, very tough stretch. Look, we went into 2020 very, very optimistic. Europe didn't have any intervention stocks left over. USMCA was ratified. China phase one, Japan phase one trade deals went into effect. So we thought that 2020 could be a good year. Obviously, the virus has had an impact. We hope to see a rebound, if you will, towards the tail end of the year and go into 2021 with momentum as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I just happen to think, too, there may be some manufacturing, I guess I would call it manufactured domestic demand, too, with the food box program out there and the food purchases in the COVID relief package. Is that creating an updraft on cheese prices too?
Sure. It's a combination of that. The USDA nearly tripled its down payment, if you will, on that program, putting more product, purchasing more product. But at the same time that was happening, our food service industry was coming back online. Pipelines were being filled, so it put a bit of stress on the cheese supply, which is a reason why the cheese prices have been so volatile. What we hope to see is greater stability in those prices and perhaps not only maintaining opportunities for farmers to profit, but also to give us a bit more of a competitive circumstance in the export market.
Interesting. Okay, let's look forward. The trade talks with the U.K., how is that proceeding, and what is the stance of dairy in that conversation?
Well, this is surprising, I think, to most of your listeners. That's the number two cheese importer in the world.
What?
And so to the extent that So to the extent that we can get an agreement with the UK that allows us market access, that doesn't burden us with European mandated geographic indications that restrict our ability to market certain cheeses, that's a tremendous market opportunity for us. And the hope is that these trade negotiations conclude expeditiously and that we have market access to that important cheese market. Hopefully that, combined with a rebounding opportunity in places like Japan and South Korea as they begin to phase out of the virus situation, they're in better shape than we are. In fact, I was just talking to our Japan office this morning. It's 120 million people live in Japan. They have 18,000 cases of the virus. They have less than 1,000 people who have died. So a third of our population, 18,000 cases compared to 1.9 million cases here. We've lost 110,000 Americans. They've lost less than 1,000 Japanese. So they're in a better position to sort of rebound from the virus, to get their economy back on track. And hopefully that will result in increased sales in that market as well.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I'd sure we need to examine exactly why the coronavirus hasn't had an impact in Japan while it has had a much bigger impact here. We need to figure out why. We've got about 30 seconds, but I just want your priority list. What's on your priority list right now?
Maintain strong market opportunity and presence in Southeast Asia. Take full advantage of the whey protein opportunities in China. Wait for South Korea and Japan to come back online. Encourage the U.S. to get a free trade agreement with the U.K. that allows us access to that cheese market, and keeping an eye on our number one market, Mexico, and maintaining opportunities there as well.
Awesome. Secretary Vilsack, it is always good to talk with you. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
You bet. That is former USDA Secretary, former Iowa Governor, Tom Vilsack, right here on AgriTalk with some good news, man. Some good news on the dairy export front. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I will put a wrap on today's first hour of AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American Agriculture, Farms On, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Dave, well, number one, let's put a wrap on the conversation there with USDA Secretary, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Really good news. 8 consecutive months of year-over-year increases in U.S. dairy exports. Really, really good news there. And like I said, it's being reflected now in cheese prices. It's being reflected now in milk prices. That's going to make it a little difficult to maintain that momentum. But it has been a very good string that we have put together for the dairy exports. You want a little? Should we do a little story time?
Oh, you want to do some story time?
Sure.
What do you got?
I'd love to tell a quick story if I could.
I want to hear it.
So it's 1998.
All right.
1998. It's the first
I was in grammar school.
It's the first year of the Western leg of the Midwest Crop Tour.
Oh, here we go.
And I was out there riding along with Byron and George Jones, father and son from Saybrook, Illinois.
Okay.
And what a family, number one. Learned so much from Byron over the years. Got to know George a little bit. I've lost track of George here over the last few years, but George said something as we were driving down the road in 1998 on Crop Tour that has stuck with me. Here he was, a young farmer trying to get started, and he said, "You know what, Chip? Just get them to quit changing the rules. If we can get them to stop changing the rules, I can come up with a plan to be successful, but they got to quit changing the rules." Now, in 98, what he was referring to was farm policy, right? But how is that any different than what is happening with dicamba right now? And I understand that it is a product that comes with some controversy. I get that. I know that. But when so many producers across the Midwest and across the South with cotton geared up to use the product to fight a real problem that is out there, that being the resistant weeds, and we can get into a long discussion about why those weeds are resistant, and there's all kinds of reasons for it, okay? But this was a product that was going to give us a chance to fix some of the wrongs that have been that were done and give us an opportunity to get out in front of the weed problems that we've got. So it's still, we've still got that opportunity for this year, but we're changing the rules again. You want to talk about another rule change that I can't believe that we are still talking about? Are the small refinery exemptions that were given out there to the small refineries to get out of their ethanol blending obligations? And now we're looking at the potential for some gap waivers for 2014 and 2015 so that they can keep their streak of consecutive exemptions actually not keep a streak, build a streak, build a streak, go back in time and build a series of years in which I said a series of years and my iPhone just started to react to me. Hey, Siri. But to build a series of years so that they can maintain a small refinery exemption going forward. Again, changing. That's not even changing rules, Davis. That's making crap up.
Well, because if I was a refiner trying to prove what financial hardship in 14-15 that precluded me from reaching my maximum potential, what are the chances I'm going to sneak back there and maybe we can fudge this a little bit? I don't know. Maybe I'm being paranoid, but now they've got to prove financial hardship in 14 and 15 so they're thinking.
Why didn't you ask for it then?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And why all of a sudden are those, you know, 17 comes along and they're, you know, you had Pruitt in there. Now we've got Wheeler in there. But you guys, I understand where the buck stops on this. And it stops right in the White House. That's where it's got to stop. And what I mean by that is these SREs, President Trump has got, if he is the supporter of the biofuels industry that he claims he is, he needs to put an end to these discussions about these gap exemptions. He needs to put a stop to the conversation right now.
Well, right and, now. Okay. If I'm him, I'm thinking, all right, so I got to keep the oil guys happy. I got to try and keep the biofuel guys happy. I don't know that you can keep both sides happy. Can you?
Remember, this goes back to when he basically put USDA Secretary Perdue in the room with, was it Rick Perry?
I think it was.
Senator Cruz.
It might have been both.
It might have been everybody. And he said, don't come out until we've got a win-win situation.
Yeah.
And you and I both kind of laughed and said, well, they may never get out of the room.
Yeah.
because you can't come up with a win-win situation in this. There's going to be a loser in this. Because of the commitments and the billions of dollars. We're asking for is that the market opportunity that is made available through the RFS is maintained. That's all.
So do you go for the votes or do you go for the campaign donations? Which do you go for?
Oh man. I don't know. Wow, sounds that's like a no-win situation. It's a conversation that we can have on Thursday in the Farm Country Update. Thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and tomorrow morning we've got Randy Dickhoot from Farmers National and Farmer Forum, Rock from Illinois, Dennis from Iowa.